tem 2 horas de curso que tem mais de 6. E aí, os primeiros meses que podem na frente, os horários da introdução, vão pedir ao bebê a vender a tanto os casos. E definir, sem concepção, em que dá de uso rápido. Só em dúvida, a sua atuação, em dúvida, em que é no que ele mais tem, em que ele de trabalho. E não, em que ele precisa, ou possível, a nada eu acho que deve ser uma maneira. Tratar de dar de perfil é consistente e hoje não faz anos de fora. A conta de grau de Estado da Fruta é que o governo de ministra admite a estrutura mal para o governo de Estado. Diz que é verdade que ele tem bloco para a mesa da Fruta. E com isso, tem que ser a reclamação de um da Fruta em Pedro. Eu disse não saber isso, e algum filho de um é consciente de ser. Eu vou tentar de muita política, visto como estou preparado, investindo. Antes de poder tirar o firearms, é que ele está operando firearms bem em discussão. Players down the line. South Africa has been waiting for the commission's findings and recommendations. What I put into the question of the compound the problem and clear the capacity is the fact that in the meantime, fraud, and corruption to the firearms license to be continued. Leaking guns, illegal water from the South Africa. The reported breakdown in the industry of the industry was recently demonstrated by the arrest of 3 police officers from the JRR for allegedly issuing fake gun licenses to go to 28 games in June. In 2013, the rare leader was a population of 18 police officers, including the head of the CRR, for alleged involvement in fraud, breaching firearms, and violations. That incident further changed the image of the CRR and resulted in a number of questions being raised about the reliability of the country's firearm control management system. The National Police Commissioner of the CRR described the arrest of 3 police officers in the CRR as this really underscores the need for the first management to assure the public about their commitment in ending the enemy fraud and corruption in the firearms control management of the country. They need to make public known and make it public known to the committee as to which strategy that they will use and also come up to turn the situation around and turn the tide against. And I think the following is a some of the questions that I think the committee should very focusing on. In Eastern Israel's budget of European issues, people are potentially opportunities. The community recommended that regulations around making of self-stating stores, control of self-firearms should be ahead. The committee should really find out whether that recommendation is important. What measures are put in place to address it? Secondly, in this particular report, the committee further asked the question of why there was none good on the table of loss on the search firearms and workforce. First was asked to provide the report on the management of the institution and the regulation and training orders to extend the management of firearms. Number of instructions. The committee said that recommended that a full report on loss of stolen firearms available to it. Therefore, I do believe that today the committee today asked for the further report to avail to the committee's members. There have been some alleged corruption in mal-administrative cases against senior managers of the police. The committee should therefore ask how many of such cases. And how many have been finalized and what is the date? Compared to the situation in 2019, are very important and can go a long way in preventing and training military firearms. The committee has been surveyed at the strategies that the CRR have in place to ensure the compliance and social recognition. I also do believe that the committee should require information on the existing litigation cases against the CRR and which measures are important to address the application backlog in the CRR and property. And how is the problem also threatened or by the existing litigation cases? Also, I do believe that The question then, how are these politicians going to address it? And another question would be, has the CFR or the self-management engaged the Secretary of Police in terms of addressing those politicians? The police is verifying how many CFR provincial officers do not have commander. And in those offices, where they are taking commander, where are the capabilities to be? Where are the capabilities to be? The committee should ask why in some instances one person commander is making CFR in two provinces, two different provinces. Then the committee should try to get the rationale behind what are the reasons behind that. Also, I think the committee should really look at the provincial breakdown of the personnel in CFR units and try to attain the qualification. I do believe that notwithstanding some criticism that it means to have the force of crime violence in the country, high levels of crime and violence continue to assume what some parents they can lose the moral side of the country and threaten the people's voices. In our South African context, closely associated with such high levels of violence as guns or firearms. The breakdown in the interface of the firearm management and control system to the access and affordability of firearms sort of comes together to form a total perspective for sort of trade and firearms. Therefore, this necessitates a strong commitment from the self management to sort of tighten up and close the gap to the country involving firearm management and control systems. This is all because the cost of this breakdown in the interest of the system is really costing lives. More innovative and open people are needed to come up with pragmatic measures aimed at cutting the cost of gun-related violence in South Africa. And I do believe that the first CFR and the community itself will then be able to form a such issue.
Thank you very much, Simran, for that presentation. So members, I think you've got the synopsis of each. We will call on SAS in the next 5 minutes. Maybe just a few household matters maybe before we start. In terms of the day, we will deal with this hearing. We'll see how it goes. And then we'll make a decision on the road ahead. I've got my own views on the presentation. I don't think it is up to scratch. Maybe just in terms of our program for next week, we will be going to the Nyanga Police Station next Wednesday, and then we'll go to another police station for surprise visit. So I just want to make alert members, you will be departing at 9 o'clock next Wednesday to Nyanga. Maybe the background for the visit to the Nyanga Police Station is that we received presentations from the police forum on problems there, and we haven't had an opportunity as for spoken to use the station monitoring tool. So we will then use the station monitoring tool to evaluate the police station. We also meet with the community police forum, and then we will go for the unannounced visit to another police station to see what happened with our issues. I think also to indicate to members that we have responses from the four entities that we have received of the interactions with them. I've asked the Secretary from all those responses. Now, some of the responses is quite clear enough what we want, and they also do respond to some of the issues. So what we're going to do is that we make those responses available to the members. We study for the next 2 weeks, and then we'll get evaluation from the committee secretary and the working advisor, and then we might call on what institutions should be recalled to the police or police. On one hand, to respond to the right that this respond to the certain increases asked, we will give the accounting officers ample time to respond, and then also engage furthermore on some of the responses so that we get a proper response. course, it's unacceptable that we gave him adequate opportunity to respond on the judge. Believe it's important to respond from his department. Start to deal with that. Before those power officers start another person. There's just one issue which we must prove after this meeting or after the election process. So I think members can justify it and we should go until 1 o'clock. But we'll see how it goes. Thank you very much. We can back for 5 minutes just to get some tea and refreshments for members who came through the rain this morning to be present at all our guests and then we'll take that to
I'm going to go to the next one. Right, ladies and gentlemen, morning, good morning. Morning, colleagues, can we just settle down? Well, good morning. We're going to start. Welcome to the honourable members to the Portfolio Committee meeting. Welcome also to the delegation from the South African Police Service. Maybe let's start with the presentation or the indication from the composition of the delegation. Lieutenant General Sitole, I'll ask you just to introduce your delegation, and then we will ask also the members of the Portfolio Committee to introduce themselves. You can go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. With your permission, I would like to start by officially tendering the apology for the National Commissioner. She has also forwarded a written apology to the committee due to the other business that she's attending. The delegation that is with me today, firstly, obviously, we've already introduced myself and the Deputy National Commissioner for Policy. Next to me, I have Major General Luke, who is the overall overseer for the firearms control. Sitting next to me is Colonel Kevin Thane, who is responsible for our administration. This side, I've got Major General Jacobs, who is from our legal division. Then I've got Major General Fender, who is also in charge of visible policy. And then behind myself, I've got our Major General, who is responsible for systems, Major General Shelley. And next to her is Major General Mendiwa, who is in charge of our strategic management. And the next to General Luke is Major General Spina. And Lieutenant Colonel Motibanya, who's just behind me. We'll be joined later by Brigadier Majeni, who is in charge of this subject. And this is how far our introduction goes. Thank you for the opportunity, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General, for your introduction. We will now give an opportunity to the honorable members to introduce themselves.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andy Mulivati. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good day. The name is Bernard Joseph. I'm a member of the alternate to Mr. Twalo to this committee.
My name is Lucky Twalo, member of the committee.
Good
Good morning, Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Pindile Mola, a member of the Sporting Committee.
Good morning, my name is Jerome Mage, a member of this committee.
Thank you, just introduce.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for your introductions. Maybe just to give the context and the background to the briefing, I think members will remember, and I think also the members of SAFS management who were present when we had the budget briefings from the National Commissioner and team. There was media reports on problems at the Central Firearms Registry, members that have been suspended, highly placed people. There was also a report from the National Commissioner that there was a crime investigation underway. And at that point, there's a committee said, well, firearms control in South Africa is a very important matter. It should be handled with high professionalism and efficiency to ensure that all our citizens are safe. There should be proper systems. And therefore, it's very important that the firearms registry should be a subject of oversight from this committee. We then decided to go this week to Pretoria to visit the registry, but because of the parliamentary program, plenaries, we had no choice and we had to call you here. So thank you very much for coming and thank you very much for your presentation. The aim of today would be to ascertain what is progress. I mean, we are aware of two investigations that was called into this unit, the one of the Secretariat of Police in 2010. And it's important that we also get this feeling to, or sense today whether those recommendations were implemented. The previous minister also, reported investigation last year. So the Central Firearms Registry is not in isolation. There is certain problems that we need to get answers on. Part of that interaction today will get those answers. From that perspective, it's going to be important to get the real picture. We've looked at the presentation, we'll give you an opportunity, but I think in terms of the presentation, certain questions are not answered. There's a lot of issues raised in the presentation in terms of problems and challenges, but what we are looking today, we are looking for is a plan. And whether we're going to get that, we will see during the interaction. But it's quite important that this unit of SAPS functions optimally, that there is good leadership, there is good oversight, and also from the police management to ensure that this unit functions effectively. There must be, for the citizens of South Africa, assurance that there is good control over firearms applications, and that the members of SAPS who are there are vetted, and that they are good quality persons. Because it doesn't in any way help us if there's media reports where people are well in charge of this unit or high placed people are involved in crime related issues. So that is a huge concern. And it will also be good today, General, if we can get maybe progress on the criminal cases. What are the progress? All of them making headway to give us the necessary assurance. So with those introductory remarks, we will immediately then ask SAPS to go ahead with their presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. And to for the opportunity. And also, acknowledging the presence of all the honourable members as they have been introduced. Just a brief overview before just marching into the presentation. We have developed a special action plan starting from the period when we experienced the challenges in the firearm registry. And the particular action plan also included action taken. And part of the action was stamping on the corruption processes which were uncovered. A presentation does not necessarily outline the action plan, but it talks to what is happening in terms of the action plan. But part of the critical issues which were dealt with, which are being addressed in terms of the action plan, we have charged 15 members departmentally based on the corruption issues that which raised. And of the members charged, there's departmental processes trials going on. One of them has already been dismissed, and then three relied pending their particular processes, and the rest of the departmental processes are pending. They continue. And then apart from the departmental cases, we've also effected four arrests. And then those particular four arrests, they are pending court. It's a criminal process going on. Then we went on a total reshuffling of the firearm section. We brought in new capacity. Some of the posts, they will be starting 1st September. The filling process has already been completed, three of them. And the head of the section is also in a process of being filled. Then, apart from the challenges which involve corruption, we also had a backlog which was our main focus. And today we can fairly report that the backlog has been addressed. And we are also able to stay with 90%. What we would be raising upfront, which is a process that we are following, is on the moratorium, on the destruction of documents, which is part of the challenges that we're facing here. For the security documents, the moratorium was not lifted. We are also following this up to our minister again, right up to the highest authority. If we're able to achieve this particular goal, then it's going to help us quite a lot. Mm-hmm. The chairperson has raised the issue of vetting. Apart from vetting in terms of our current action plan, we have also introduced the rotation of the firearm members so that they don't stay too long until they're caught up. But apart from that, we've also added a auxiliary VFOs so that if for any reason our current VFOs are not on duty, we do not experience outstanding applications which would take us to backlog. That is just briefly in terms of our current action plan, and the implementation is continuing. It's a turnaround action plan. Just going through the presentation, what we will be giving you as part of the subject content is the composition of the firearm control register, the purpose, the legislative framework, the curriculum of the statute, the personal breakdown, the responsibilities, and the current status of the CFO. The challenges that we are outlining are challenges that we are already addressing in the turnaround action plan, except those that will be elevated to the higher level than the recommendations. And then the firearm registry, it results under the component firearm unavisable policy. And he is also dealing with secondhand goods, just giving you that feedback. And here, it's just to give you the breakdown in terms of what is the rationale behind CFR. And then we're coming duties that are assigned to us by register in terms of the Act. And then we're also managing the database. And then we're looking into the administrative process of the whole firearm. And then we're also looking at improving command and control, which is part and parcel of what we're addressing in the action plan to make the administration of this section very effective. And then we're also looking at the assessment of performance, which is linked to the prevention of corruption. developing. The capacity building, we're also looking at a correct structure that should be able to handle the capacity and as well as the challenge of this particular region. We started with the current structure, but we are also building or extending this particular structure into the correct capacity. And one of the issues that we're thinking about upfront is the quality assurance process that we're bringing to the structure and as well as research. Then obviously the design, which would also talk to the upgrading of the system that we are using. Then the management of the firearm, here we're just outlining the legislative framework that talks to the legislation, which is the Firearm Control Act of 2060. Then we're talking to the regulations of 2004. Then we're also talking to S28 of 2006. And I'm not going to outline the rest, but this is just the legislative framework that governs this session. And this is the current organigram led by FGD at the top, and then you see there then the chickeners, and the drilling down. What we intend to bring in terms of the turnaround to this class, I want to add the quality assurance, which we want to bring again at the level of a kennel. And that will also include the research in order to make it more effective. There's the submission we're preparing for our HR committee, and then in order to, for this particular part of this attention. This is just the personnel breakdown you would see from the brigadier, and we then have a total of 163. And a total of 163, it's currently handling 1.7 million on us. And with a very high statistics of applications, and hence the rationale behind the improvements. The responsibilities of the CFR, it starts from the processing of the application. It takes us through a quality control process right up to the approvals, which end up at the level of the brigadier who is assigned to approve the applications, those that finally meet the requirement. I'm not necessarily going to take you through individual ones. Thank you. I think these responsibilities also continue. They extend to the reports and up until to the process of the applications themselves. You just take into account that the applications that we do reject, and those applications are those that do not meet the requirements. And those requirements are clear also in terms of the act, because we just want to make sure that it's complete compliance. Then we've got a separate task team, which is looking for applications involving imports and exports, and exports. That is now the temporary licenses. I think the rest is just the distribution of the work. What we can highlight here is that we got the 90 days for compliance, which we have tied ourselves up. And currently, we are working within the 9 days, 90% of the application. We are meeting this particular standard without any hassles. Thank you. These are applications per province. This is just a breakdown, and these are the figures that is now per province. And including the exports, it's just that we are giving to you. I will not necessarily give them individually. Thank you. The challenges, as I've already said up front, these challenges have already shared internally. And after they have been advanced, we came up with a general action plan to deal with. And few of them, as you see them listed, the litigation cases, it is that related to appeal board, the space policy up to human capacity, but these are matters addressed in the current turnaround action plan. Thank you.
The space facilities that I can highlight here is only the challenge which we have with the moratorium. We are still keeping quite a lot of documentation. And using that particular space currently, it closes down the opportunity for us to extend on accommodation. But as I said, we are looking at another route to approach it. But we are also, in the near future, looking at moving away from the paper because our system is in a process of upgrading. The first level that we're looking at is sending the links to home address so that we are able to pick up when a firearm owner has passed away, we can be able to deal with that particular matter in terms of the Firearm Control Act. But then in future, would that be we're looking at eliminating the paperwork and going to a full system so that it can be easy for us to operate. Thank you. Well, here we're just looking at policy alignment, which also includes the 90% working days. We do not necessarily have two serious challenges that we experience here. We are just looking at improving the standards, and that's what we're taking as a challenge. Well, the GFOs, we do have them spread all over in all our police stations, and they are currently able to handle the challenge. But what I've highlighted earlier on was the fact that we are now introducing the auxiliary DFOs, so that if our DFO is not available at the police station, the auxiliary can handle those applications and show and then make sure that they are complete. And there's no delay. So from the turnaround plan's point of view, I think we do have a backup that will assist us to deal with this matter effectively. Well, the provinces, as you would see that, let me just explain to say, one, we have the Section 102 processes. The Section 102 processes, they always apply to check whether people are still fit to possess firearms. But this is linked to several issues. Some of the people who are in possession of firearms, they may drop below the requirement and no longer meet the requirements, say the committed cases or the domestic violence issues. The death capacity we do have, but we have also improved the link between assaults and detectives because some of the firearm owners who get deemed unfit to possess firearms as a result of certain investigations. And then we have now improved the integrated approach between detectives as well as the firearm control, which is from visible policing, so that we close that particular gap. When the dealers is in terms of the act, that they have the obligation to submit the returns and there were certain provisions for compliance, then we have introduced internal control framework and also a special risk management plan in order to deal with issues relating to that. And any failure to comply, we then apply the act. And this can end up taking us to a level where we would even end up confiscating the firearms if they fail to comply, which also relates to the renewal of their license. And from a human capital's point of view, I have indicated that current parcel of our action plan, we are expanding the structure of the post structure of the session. And we include new posts, but we are also looking at filling the current posts, including those gaps that emanated from the processes of corruption. And those other posts, they getting filled, that is by 1st September. The physical resources, they also apply in terms of the resource metrics. As we expand the structure, we also look at the other physical resources that we should go with the extended structure. and it's actually the resource metrics that determines that, but they include the examples that were giving you the computer printers as well as the first machines, so that the web can be more user friendly for the members. The equipment is also just included as part and parcel of that particular resource metrics. Our recommendations, I think they stand as we have outlined them. Firstly, these are recommendations that some of them they can be met internally, which relate to the structure. I've already stated them. And then the accommodation process, it's part and parcel of what we are looking at. I think at the present moment they operate from different buildings, but we are looking at them coming under one roof so that they all operate there. And then we also have a system that will be fluent for them to be able to apply. And then as stated, we also want to move from the paper side to electronic, and we're also upgrading the system so that I think we can improve from the current system, your external links as well as your internal links. So these recommendations are already centered around the action plan that we're talking to, and there's other recommendations that we are also sharing with the minister, especially like the moratorium, that we go back on another memo and then to approach parliament so that we can get the moratorium lifted and then destroy some of the documents. I think, Honorable Chairperson, the presentation ends up here. What I would again like to emphasize is the fact that the challenges were highlighted because we wanted to be honest and be open to the committee. But we also wanted to bring to the attention of the committee that we have decided on a turnaround approach on this particular section. And the view of those problems or challenges which were there that we have managed to correct, we are continuing to improve the effectivity of the session. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General, for your presentation. We will now go to questions, starting from Romulabasi. Maybe just in terms of your response before you dealt with your presentation in May, you've indicated that there's now a turnaround strategy, or, you know, and one September you've mentioned a few times. What I want to know, when did you implement this new strategy? And my question still is not answered. The task team that the Secretariat established 4 years ago, with certain timelines, recommendations, joint task teams between the police and Secretariat, what happened to that, to those recommendations? Because if you say to me, well, this task team was established this year, and it raises certain questions, what happened to that? Also, the commission of inquiry that was established last year with relation to arms dealers, that investigation, where are you with that? Because that's quite pertinent in terms of progress. I'm just concerned that, well, this turnaround strategy in 1 September seems to be the milestone dates, but when was this announced? Because some of the issues are historic and quite pertinent this last, even in the past terms. If we can just give a response to that. And then also, thank you very much for your information on the criminal steps, political steps. We applaud the steps for that, taking those steps. That is really good, and it is appreciated if you can get a written response, written information on that steps that you're taking. So that will be the two questions from my at this stage. Honourable Mulabas.
You're going to ask a heavy question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me thank the presenter, General Fitole. Mm-hmm. To say, in your action plan, you spoke of 15 officers that were charged. What are their ranks? And the four arrests, are these four arrests of police officers, or just arrived. And you also touched on backlogs that are addressed. Does it mean you don't have backlogs anymore? My second question is, the image of CSR is dented. Is there an improvement in this? My third question, do all police stations have ESOs? And if they don't, what happens? My fourth question, you have two systems, the one of the database, the one of the old one and the new one. What is the situation regarding the integration of these two systems? My last one, when we visit the police stations, we find out that there are a lot of lost and stolen maybe firearms in the hands of the police. What happens to these police officers who lose these firearms? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You state that you now complete the process of applications and renewals within 90 days. Now, someone who's been on the committee for far too long, you'll excuse my skepticism, because I've had men just like you say exactly the same thing, presentation after presentation after presentation. My own license took me nearly 2 years before they phoned and said, come collect it. We know there were thousands of firearm licenses we found as a committee in boxes at Johannesburg. At Johannesburg Central, lying in boxes, under tables, never delivered. People have paid, they've done the test, they've got the license, but they never actually received it. So I want you to just repeat it. You're saying in 90% of the cases of applications and renewals, it is dealt with satisfactorily, they have the card within 90 days. Is this correct?
I think consensus.
Okay.
Maybe he can. All right. I'm welcome to do that just now, and I will listen to your answer. I'm delighted to be able to congratulate you, but please, we've heard this song before. I am still hearing of cases where women go into staff stations, they've been beaten by a spouse, they are told go home, and they're not entered in the domestic violence registry. Now, is there, of course, the husband then goes, hires for a firearm, gets one, and I know the particular case I've dealt with where he then goes and shoots her dead. Now, is there something in your turnaround strategy that is perhaps leading to a better liaison between the person who runs the DVA register and the CFOs? Is there some kind of relationship that pulls them together? And in this turnaround strategy, you did say you've suspended 15. One was dismissed. I'd like to know there's a criminal case against that person. The three who resigned, are there criminal cases against those three, or are they just walking off into the sunset? Why do we only have four criminal cases when, what about the other 11 who were involved in this? Is there a possibility further criminal charges will be laid? Because this most certainly is not something that can ever be swept under the carpet, and the people involved have to be treated extremely severely. My final issue is that when we go to stations, and I think it's a very serious issue that has to be addressed perhaps by yourself, we ask for certain firearms to be produced. We just go through and say, okay, find me this one in your SAT 13. Find it. And frequently it takes 8 hours. By the time we're finished lunch, about to get on the bus, someone runs up waving the firearm. Now, there are rumors that the firearms out of those stores are being hired out on a daily basis to criminals. Those are the rumors that go around that I hear in virtually every province. What is being done? We've seen extremely lax control of firearms at certain stations. I mean, we've had a certain chairperson who was known for putting badly protected firearms in a handbag and slamming them down the table during the post-visit briefing. Our new chair has yet to do that, and I don't think he carries a handbag, but
I must tell you, it's been a huge issue. So please, would you speak to that? Thank you.
Thanks. Are you going down the line?
I would like to pose one question, something that most of the public members would like to know. What is the average time frame for an application of a license before it's being approved?
I think let's take those questions, it's a lot, and then we will start with Mr. Twala, and then we will go back in. Because I think it's about 12, 30, 40 questions, if I count correctly. So let's start then. No, thank you.
Yes, President, thank you. President, I would like to start with the turnout strategy. I first want to put 1st September for it. 1st September is for the filling of posts. The posts that we have filled, the new staff will be starting 1st September. I want to go back from where the problem of firearms started 2 years back, almost 2 years back. Then there was a first challenge which was accompanied by the padlock. And there was also the corruption exposed. The turnaround strategy was introduced immediately after the first challenges were faced.
What's the exact idea?
I would say it's last year, the turnaround, the exact month, you remember? Last year, July, that's when the turnaround strategy was introduced. We put the accident, we started implementation right from last year, July. The issues that we are relating to now are issues that are rolling out of the action plan. I'm just going to ask General Jacobs just to briefly touch on commission side. Chairperson,
thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you referred to two issues. The one was the report from the Secretariat. Of course, that one linked with the backlog. There was a task team established very shortly after the report from the Secretariat under the chairpersonship of the Deputy National Commissioner. That task team sat very frequently and worked on the backlog until that was resolved. The second issue is the issue of the Commission of Inquiry by the Minister during last year. Chair, I believe that that Commission is finalising its report now. So there is not a report that has been finalised and submitted to the police at this stage. We're still looking for the outcome of the report. That is the one that deals with the firearms dealers. So there, of course, once we receive that report, we will need to act as soon as possible on that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. There was a suggestion that we should also submit a written respond to a 10 request. We will do so, Chairperson. Then there was the question with regard to the ranks of the people arrested, I'm sorry, charged. The two brigadiers, is two colonels, is three lieutenant colonels, and then the rest is civilians, classes 2 and 6, different levels of class. And that is now the 15 in terms of total. Among the people who have been arrested, there's no police yet, it's civilians who were arrested. The police were just charged. I think, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to repeat again that yes, we are here at the backlog. I'm talking as we speak. Moving from the implementation of the turnaround action plan in July last year, we've been gradually working on it, and as we speak, it has been cleared. And all members of the public, thank you very much. The image of the firearm control, one of the things I can indicate is that the National Commissioner has introduced an integrity management section within the police.
And that integrity management is also looking at serious issues of protecting the image of the whole organization. And when we experience problems like this, we obviously also bring in that particular process. And what I can confirm, Chairperson, is that in the action plan, the question of image building, it's an integral part. And we demonstrate it when we deal with corruption and risk management. And the Chairperson earlier on raised the issue of vetting. That is one of the deliverables in the action plan. And that particular process is started. But there's a lot of other processes that we need to play to clear our image. When there's a misconduct, clean other departments, it obviously bends our image. But how we react to it, it also restores our image. And therefore, we've got a zero tolerance to it. Let me also confirm, Chairperson, that all stations have DFOs. But I also want to be upfront and say, Chairperson, that we have a promotion scheme in the organization. And all members, in terms of our promotion policy, they would apply for posts. And some of those members could include the DFOs. Now, honorable members may read a particular police station and find that there is a DFO, but maybe simply because it's been promoted to another post. And once such is discovered, then it means within 30 days, we shall exclude that particular post. This may also include transfers. We do not necessarily transfer people as easy as that, but in some other cases, you would also know, honorable members, that you might get approached by members either of stress-related issues, circumstances that are beyond their control, and they would be transferred. In such instances, you might find. But it's also part and parcel of our action plan. We are fully monitoring that all stations have DFOs. And what we're further implementing now, just seeing to it that all of them have got auxiliary DFOs too. Chairperson, I'm just going to ask two general chairs just to talk a little on the two systems. I have indicated it's part of our action plan, but you can see more than.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the questions that the Chairperson asked was the work of the previous system that was held. Amongst others was to have a look into the new system that was implemented for the entire fire registry to see whether it was covering all the elements that were set for the recommendations. Amongst others was the question that is raised by the Honourable Member, whether we are going to be integrating the old and the new system. With the new specification that were written for the contract that was attained at that stage was to ensure that the old system is migrated to the new system. But with the work that has been continued with the work or the outcome of the testing, some of us were to realize that rather than migrating the new system, it would be better to expand the current existing system, even the different architectural setups. I'm not sure whether the committee takes note that the contract was revised, and we had a look as to where the deliberations or where the shortfalls. It's one of the contracts that has been delayed the work in the particular environment within the firearm registry. One of the action steps is to correct the existing contract in that environment. As I was taking over in the environment there, amongst other things, was to set up commissions to also have a look as to the work that was done already thus far. Amongst those were then those gaps that you identified that still needs to be done. So in answer to the question that was being posed, we are going to be expanding on the old ones for the current system given the current sector so that we don't delay the progress of the work that is being done while we conclude the gap analysis of the system that was implemented to take care of the entire system. But we are making sure that work is not affected in the process. We do that so that all the backlog that we realize to date and we do not regenerate them again so the system flows. So in the next sitting, Chair will be providing a proper outline as to what will be the outcome of those analysis because that process is still at that stage. The conclusive work hasn't been completed yet. So as we appear first or in the response, we'll be able to give a conclusive response to be saying exactly in what detail will that process take. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. There was a question on lost and stolen firearms from men. I think, firstly, a firearm is treated as state property. When a member loses the firearm, we open a criminal case. We start a criminal investigation. Two, then we commission a Section 102 investigation. We check whether is this member still fit to possess a firearm. If the outcome is otherwise, that this member is still unfit, then we kick off the HR processes. Part of the HR processes would be asking the question where the member is placed. Can he continue to function there? Because if it's an operational function, he must he would empower himself to stay there. But those processes may continue up to a level where we get to a board of fitness. These are procedures that we follow in case they've lost firearms. There's also clear instructions. When we give a member a firearm, there's certain requirements that the member must meet. Like, for instance, one of them is that he must have a place where he stays. And there's also instructions, even when he's driving, how the firearm must be handled. If we discover that he has violated any of those, we apply those particular procedures strictly so. Then, this question also extends to the hiring out of firearms in the dating camps. I'm not going to take a defensive approach. I'm just going to confirm to say, yes, when we get such rumors, we deploy our intelligence. And up to this far, we haven't experienced a case. But each time we get alerted, we acknowledge and appreciate. And we also appreciate this alert from the Honorable Member. And we will also be following it up from an intelligence point of view. But in order to make sure that we have control over the firearms in the dating camps, I'm not going to deny it that the Honorable Members previously, there's quite a lot of findings they have made at police stations with regard to the dating camps. And when we appear before the committee, they were outlined to us with certain recommendations and directives, but we acted on those particular recommendations and directives. Lately, the National Commissioner has introduced a combined assurance process. And with this particular combined assurance process, we are working together, brought together our inspectorate division and working together with internal audit. But we're also even linking to the audits that are done by the oversight bodies. As I'm speaking now, in terms of the combined quality assurance process, no police station is not visited over a period of a year. And these police stations, they are divided between the different oversights. Specifically, take a particular group, internal KJ audit, take a particular group. And one of our priorities is the LAPS dating camps, which has been raised by the portfolio committee on several occasions. As I'm speaking, I'm not going to say we no longer experience problems, but we see quite a lot of improvement. But we are still continuing to improve. And we would like to come in the near future with better improvement again to the portfolio committee. Then, Honorable Chairman, the question on domestic violence vis-a-vis the firearm control. I would like to start by saying the National Commissioner took the decision to bring all the policing operatives under one umbrella. One of the goals that we wanted to achieve was an integrated policing. And I would like to first say, fortunately enough, we've been sitting in a meeting with visible policing before yesterday. And one of the areas that we've been talking about are the cross-cutting responsibilities that brings together all those sections of policy that are tied down to produce the same product that should lead us to same target and same goal. Directives are already issued to the sections that dealing with domestic violence to work together with firearm control. Like, for instance, I would remember one of the instructions I've issued on the measure that we'll be discussing was, when there's a report within domestic violence, how do we pick it up that a domestic violence case relates to a person's in possession of a firearm, whether it's a policeman or it's a member of the public, because the two has got an interrelationship. The same applies to our internal situation. So this is how I can respond to it. We're getting there to that. And it's part of the general strategy. Then the question of on the three who resigned and the one has been dismissed. Honourable Chairperson, can I honestly ask for an opportunity that we generate more information on this and then we provide a written response? Thank you for your permission. And then, Chairperson, there was a question also raised by the Honourable Member on the 90 days. And the Honourable Member license, I first would like to apologize for the fact that she received her license late. But I wanted to try distinction, Honourable Chairperson, between...
A lot of apologize.
thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I'm drawing a distinction between an outstanding license and a backlog. Yes, I think... we have cleared the backlog, but that does not necessarily mean we do not have outstanding licenses. And outstanding licenses, Honorable Chair, there's also the members whom we inform to come and collect the guns, and they don't come in time. That is part of outstanding. But obviously, there may be those that are outstanding from us. I would like to conclude this response by saying, yes, we do have outstandings, but all the outstandings that we have, they don't amount to a backlog yet. And we've got mechanisms to deal with outstanding licenses. I'm sure there's a last question on the 13 stores. Members taking too long to can identify a particular firearm. I think this process, Chapter 3, is firstly linked to the combined assurance process in which we have included the firearm registers and also the systems that are dealing with the firearms. And we have also brought together visible policing and as well as supply chain, because that's where we also have the first system. So we are also working on improving this particular area. But we will see the shortcomings there and then. One day when members, honorable members come to the police station, we will take the shortest time to identify this firearms. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, General. Before Mr. Kuala, just maybe two observations about the responses. One, if the last team was appointed last in July, who led the task from that time until now? That is just a question. As you know, Mr. Twana, you can continue.
General, the firearms, I see in the period under review, there are about 12,982 firearms recovered. Now, what happens with these firearms upon recovery? Do you keep them in storage, and for how long do you keep them in storage and for purpose? Naturally, I would presume one of the tasks would be to identify their previous owners and see if you can hand them back to them. If not, at what point do you make a decision to destroy them? Because then they re-enter the market via other ways. And perhaps to curb them re-entering the market via other ways, they would have to be destroyed.
Honorable Mbembe.
Thanks, Chief. One question from me at this point as well. It seems there's a set of mutually reinforcing problems around the designated firearm officers, sort of running throughout the whole chain. You mentioned challenges around lack of training, which could have a spillover into the capacity to conduct Section 102 investigations. You mentioned that there's strain around sort of multitasking. So it seems there's a almost feedback loop around the ear holes and their ability to carry out their functions. So my question is, if you could just elaborate on what the turnaround strategy is to address the sets of EFO-related problems, because that seems to be where a lot of the bottlenecks are happening. Thank you.
Thank you, GPC. My needs too. In organizational structure, I see here that one section manager, one section commander is managing two provinces. I want to know is that section manager is earning two salary provinces or what? And I can see here in Gauteng there are two different CFR units and units in Gauteng. Why are two different CFRs? Thank you, Chief.
Honorable Marky.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, mine would be just points of interest. In a situation whereby, say you've got security companies and they go down or they become dysfunctional and they've got licenses. What happens to their licenses? If you could clarify on that one. And just for information again, the refusal of licenses. If you could give me some of the reasons, not obvious reasons, like you have a case or something of that nature, some other reasons that might make a person or that might make you refuse a license, because some people get license very easy and some not. Maybe if you could explain or how does that happen, and even the type of license is that is maybe a shooting rifle, machine gun, and how do you assess such things? And the last question would be on, it would have been easier if you had numbered the presentation, but I would say it's under human capital. Bullet point number 5 says lack of personnel, e.g. insufficient lieutenant panels within the respective regions. Maybe I don't understand how that works. If you say insufficient lieutenant colonels, would that mean that you can't transfer lieutenant colonel from the Western Cape to Limpopo? Or how does it happen that you don't have enough? Because it's a bit difficult for me to understand if you say you don't have enough.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. So I want to start by saying that when we implemented this Firearms Control Act, a very strict regulation has been implemented, especially when it comes to people having legal firearms. And the moment we have high-profile cases where firearms is involved, we show the finger to the lawful abiding citizen and gun owners of South Africa. But I want to say today, when it comes to the police and the Central Firearms Registry, it should be more strict, because the real control of firearms is vested in the Central Firearms Registry. And then, Chairperson, I want to ask a question I can't understand. I don't know how many years we are hearing at this committee about a turnaround strategy. I'm telling you, I don't know how many reds that strategy is in at this moment, because we hear it every year. How on earth is it possible that if I look at slide number 19, that we say there is improper control of firearms and in at police stations? Improper control in 2014. How is it possible? It's not acceptable to say that we have a turnaround strategy. Why don't they have control there? A lack of DFO training. I understand that lack. Because maybe the general can tell me where in the act it says that if a person is 78 years or 80 years old, he or she is incompetent to have a firearm. Because that is what DFO people are telling people. No, you're too old. You're not competent. Because of a lack of training. And then the second one, on slide 21, and you can smile, General, and you will have lots of smiles, but this is a serious matter. When there is a renewal, the registry staff cannot locate the documents on the registration system because they were not registered on approval. How is it possible? It's a simple act that if you have a renewal, of course it must be on the system. This morning the general comes and tells us, no, that's not because they don't click on. That links up with the third issue of appeals. And normally when you ask a question, and I want to ask the general, how many outstanding appeals do we have? Because normally the police say, well, it's not part of our problem because it's a few more. I have to do the decision. Let's do some bench shifting. But in the slides it says, the problem with appeals is that the registry cannot provide the documents to the appeal board. How is it possible? I'm telling you, if I look at this slide presented this morning, actually the general and the firearms registry admits that don't have control on firearms. And I say that is a shame to the people of South Africa and for crime in South Africa. And it links up with other questions. There's no control on firearms when it comes to the registry, and that's why they can hire them up, because nobody knows about it. Can we get clear answers on this, Chairperson? Because, you know, if I am a firearm owner, if I do something wrong, as you said, I am criminally charged. Now my question is, can the general tell us how many officials have been criminally charged and found guilty? How many? Thank you.
Honourable Molabasi, then Honourable Kola Bano, then I'll ask some questions and then we get further responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the past financial year, at a police station in Mkhuzi, in Wesselburg, a trunk full of firearms linked to various crimes was bullied at the police station. Can you tell us what happened since it was stolen? My second question is on is data still recorded manually at CFR? My third one is how much money has been spent on CFR IT system to date, and what has this money been spent on? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Could you fill us in on the status of current litigation against the Central Firearms Registry? How many cases? How long have they been around? How many have you lost? How many have you won? Also, what is the status in the same situation in relation to the Appeals Board?
how many appeals are they looking at, and what was the litigation against the appeals board, if any? We've read a great deal about the fact that FATS members have sold firearms that were handed into SAS for destruction. Hit the headlines, again damaged the SAS image terribly. What is the status of the investigation into that matter? I mean, we saw the huge publicity where you had firearms being crushed and everyone was cheering and what a wonderful thing, and yet we all heard time and again that at the scene of various crimes there were firearms and they would go and rush in to arrest an 80-year-old lady who'd actually handed in her deceased husband's firearm for destruction 3 years prior to that. So I'd like an update on that situation. Also, in that so many SATS members do not have their competency certificate, how will it look in a court? Let's say Honourable Cronenwald fails to renew his license. So you arrest him and take him to court, and his legal team then turn around and say, actually, you have, and I mean the numbers are being disputed, but let's say it's an average of 30,000 SATS members carrying firearms who don't have competency certificates. They've only passed a session of it, they haven't, or they failed the test, but they passed this. It's a mess. Now what are you going to do? Because he's going to get a scot-free. I'd like an explanation, because it's going to be used against you. One of your members without a license is going to shoot and kill someone, and he will go to, he or she will go to jail for life. Because somebody somewhere in this system here, or in training, has messed up so badly that we have actual SAPS members carrying firearms with their licenses for. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Further question from my side, and it links to the question of the casting, but also the presentation. Because if you say you've got a turnaround strategy, you must have a budget to speak to. And that's one big fact in the presentation this morning. Because your action steps for any turnaround strategy must link to your budget. So we don't see anything with regard to that. And I just want to go to the start issue of the IT issues that Honourable Mulabatsi referred to. Now, there was the AG report, and I think it's historic issues, but I just want to get your response on where are we. Because if we say in 2014, it's still a manual system, or partly IT generated, then you've got a big problem. The tender was signed in 2004 for 92 million, and in the end, the total contract was 412 million. 412 million. 2006, 70 months after the completion, it was still not completed. There was an SIU investigation, but it was 80% complete. Now the question is, 400 million later, in terms of your IT system, where are we today? Is the system completed? Are we still waiting for the outcome of the investigation? Or are we still with a hybrid system, on the one hand manually and otherwise IT? Can we get maybe a sense of where we are? Because that will inform the committee on what would be our assessment of the turnaround strategy. Because if there's no financial implications linked to your turnaround strategy, we can't really make a judgment. And then we'll have to ask you to come again in the next few weeks. So we want to get assurance that the turnaround strategy is really a working in process action plan.
Yes, President, thank you very much. President, the first question that you asked was relating to the leadership of the trust team. The trust team currently is led by Major General Luk. He's the overseer. And over and above that, I am the program manager for the trust team. Then, Honourable Chairperson, there was a second question on the 12,800 firearms which were recovered. But the real question is, what exactly do we do when these firearms are recovered? I think, firstly, there are those that get linked to criminal cases. Like, for instance, we take them on ballistic process, and then to prove whether are they not involved in the commission of any crime. That is a process on its own that is getting followed. And then some of them
we then get prima facie evidence that they're involved in certain criminal offenses, then we link them to those particular criminal processes. Now, the only time we can dispose them is when the case is disposed. Then there are those which would not be belonging to any. And those particular firearms, they are taken into the store, secured, to await the destruction. And the period is 6 months. Yes. Then, there was the question of the DFOs. How exactly do we address them in terms of the turnaround? What is sitting in the turnarounds with regard to the DFO? One is a deployment plan that relates to the DFOs. And then two is the capacity building and a refresher training. And then the other address is their performance assessment in terms of their responsibilities as outlined in the Firearm Control Act. And obviously, we then link them to a monitoring, a content monitoring process. I may not necessarily be responding to what the honorable member wants exactly to know, but maybe this is what is sitting in the turnaround. And there was a question which relates to the DFOs in the provinces. I'm going to just with the permission Jefferson ask the DMSN to explain how is this regional approach working currently in terms of leading the provinces.
In response to the question, it happens in instances that there are commanders that are managing two provinces at the same time. The regions were divided into several regions, taking into consideration the lot of applications that was receiving. For instance, in Gauteng, it is divided into two regions, which is under one province, that is Gauteng South and Gauteng North. This is the largest province where we are getting a lot of firearm applications. So in instances where a region commander is having two regions, like Northwest and Northern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Eastern Cape and Free State, these were the regions where we received not too much applications, that the person would be able to deal with it. And that person is not earning two salaries, earning a salary on the level of a colonel. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I can just sum it out by saying it's a work allocation and distribution in which we try to improve and assist the province. Then there was a question, Honorable Chair, with regard to the security companies. I'm not sure, it could be those that get liquidated or they collapse. I think, firstly, it remains our responsibility to see to it that whoever is in possession of firearms or deal with firearms, the person or the company is still meeting the requirements of the Act in terms of killing those particular firearms. Now, if it is a security company that is collapsing our interest, we coming in and say we want to review and reassess whether the current status of the security company allows the company to keep the arms. And if for any reason we discover that the position of the company, say for instance the board of directors of the company dissolves and the current person of the company keeping those particular firearms is resting more on the board to ensure compliance, we would then begin to come in and say we reassess. Then the outcome is going to be taken up exactly again in terms of the firearm control sector. If we discover that they would no longer meet the requirement, we will then take a legal procedure, and which may end up with the confiscation of those firearms to us, bring them under the arm of the law, and it's such time that whether these firearms are sold to another company which is competent, or maybe they bring in an entity that can meet the requirements of the act. Maybe this is what I can, this is how I can explain it at the present moment. More to say, we will relook whether these companies did meet the requirements of the act, and if not, then we take an action. But maybe I can also ask General Jacobs to add from a legal point of view.
Thank you, Chair. Of course, with the registration of firearms for security businesses, there's a natural person, a responsible person, that needs to take responsibility for the firearm. So if there's a chain of ownership, or if the business comes to a standstill, etc., there's actions that need to follow in terms of the chain of the responsible person, or either to sell the firearms, etc. But the company can't just be sold and the firearms just transferred to the other company without the change of the responsible person.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. With your permission, Chairperson, I'm going to ask Brigadier Martin to respond to the reasons for refusal of a license.
Thank you, Chair. The reasons for refusal of application are provided to the applicants. Immediately the decision is taken that the license has been refused, a letter is sent out to the applicant stating the reasons as well, that the applications or the application was refused based on the following reasons. And when we're taking consideration of those applications, each application is refused or considered on its own merit. And also coupled with this question, it was asked by the same person, that there are other people that are having machine guns. We are looking at the applicants who apply in terms of the sections within the Firearm Control Act. Those that are having machine is not a machine gun, it's hand machine carbine. So those people, it means that a firearm is a semi-automatic rifle and it's not issued to any other applicant. That applicant must meet certain requirements. For an example, he must be a dedicated sportsperson or hunter, and also he must be affiliated or with the organization or other associations. Yeah, and other for professional hunting, there are different categories of sections within the central, within the Firearm Control Act that the people are applying.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We may not necessarily list the reasons because they differ from the one case to the other, but we can just take examples to say maybe this person has got previous case involving the use of firearms which may got elevated to a criminal case and may was fined guilty. But it will depend on the merits of each one, and we will finish the reasons to that particular applicant. Then there was a question, Honorable Chair, of the human capital, and why don't we transfer people from somewhere to the firearm control. I'm just going to give a principle first, Honorable Chair, to say whenever we receive new legislation from government, that legislation finds us with a current resource management plan. And the current resource management plan suffices, it gives us the resource capacity to address what we have. When we receive that new legislation, we go on a process of a resource requirement for the operationalization of that legislation. So once we work out that resource requirement, it would therefore mean that the personnel that we need in order to implement the new legislation are not necessarily part of the current structure. And all the personnel that we have in the current structure, they are tied up to functions which are there to service the community. Now, if I take from the current structure and to implement the new legislation, it means I'm going to have a gap in the current service, and in terms of the service structure, the client is going to complain. Now, this particular legislation part of the resource requirement, it will impact on a structural change. It will expand on our structure, which means that we will then be applying for a new post structure. Then we will not transfer from the current, but there will be a web study based on the new legislation that will give us new posts. Then we will get to a process of confirming those posts. Then we will fill those posts, but they are new posts that come with the legislation. So when we say we have a shortage or a lack, it's not necessarily a shortage, it's a requirement. Yeah, it's a new requirement. And as I've also indicated in the turnaround, that's what we have included, that we are also making a submission to our HR committee and ask the national commissioner to authorize new posts that we should give to the CFR. And that is a process that we continue with. This is how I can try to respond to this question. The other question, it was a bit of a loaded question. There's a number of issues. Firstly, I would agree that yes, stricter measures need to apply to the police because we obviously know the law and we're dealing with this particular aspect. There was a question of improper control, that we may not necessarily have improper control while we have a general strategy, lack of training, which includes a renewal vis-a-vis the registration. But let me take the first two. We have raised the challenges in order for the committee to acknowledge that after advancing these challenges, we came up with a turnaround to address these challenges. We did experience them, but with the turnaround, we have tackled them. At the present moment, we do not have in proper control. We have addressed them and we continue to address it. Including the training, because when I outlined the turnaround strategy, I've also included training as well as refresher training. And it's a continuous orientation about the act, and then so that we make sure that these members are on their toes and we service the community according to demand. This is fairly linked to a community education program where the community also react to us and say, these are the shortcomings as far as the service we receive is concerned, and we translate that again into training. So it's a continuous process. Then this also included the appeals, in which I would like to ask the Netherlands Jacobs just to relate the number of appeals.
Jay, I'll speak on the number of appeals, but maybe one of the questions was about the litigation. And if I maybe just combine the issues, I'm sure there could be an answer from Brigadier Matsingi about the numbers of appeals. Jay, firstly I need to say that when it comes to legal processes, where there's just inquiries from attorneys, that will of course go directly to the Centre Files Register. But once there's actual litigation, legal services becomes involved. And, Chair, I think there's actually a number of court cases that's of importance to the committee in terms of affecting the firearms register and these processes. The first one is the SA Hunters and Game Conservation Association. Chair, this application was brought as an urgent one around about 2009 when the transitional process of the Act was concluded. And an interim order was obtained at that stage that people who are in possession of firearms in terms of what they call game licenses that were issued in terms of the 1969 Act, that those people are allowed to remain in possession of their licenses, of the firearms in terms of those old licenses. That case has not been solved yet. The Secretariat had a number of meetings with the role players, etc. Chair, I think you've noticed that there is also an amendment to the Firearms Control Act that's on the program of committee. And that is one of the issues that we might possibly be able to address in the Amendment Act. In terms of, you realize, Chair, that with the transitional position that transpires in terms of Schedule 1 to the Act, they actually, if you have to accommodate people who never applied for or reapplied in terms of the new Act, you might possibly need to have to address that in legislation. So, Chair, that is an issue that is being looked at in terms of the draft legislation. And maybe I can just say to the committee that we have finally distributed the draft that in the South for final comments. And within the next week or two, we will seek the permission of the minister to publish a draft book for public comments. Chair, why we have distributed again, there's a lot of role plays in the SAS that have changed. Since the bill was initially consulted by the Secretariat with all role players. So we are looking at possible meetings also that could come from the police side. And then, of course, although there were discussions and consultations with role players, we feel it's necessary to publish it for general comment because people will always say that you've let out this in this interest group. So we really want to cover all the interest groups in terms of the process, and hopefully we will be able to take the votes to cabinet and bring it to parliament before the end of the year. Chair, that is relating to the old dean licenses, and then we had the case of Justice Alliance of South Africa, which is another. You will recall, Chair, that the Act determines that the minister must provide for guidelines for compensation. That case went as far as the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Sassuolo case. The Supreme Court of Appeal found in favour of the guidelines that the minister issued. And then the other case is the Transvaal Agricultural Union and others. The union brought an application to have various sections of the Firearms Control Act be declared unconstitutional. These sections relate to the number of firearms. And here, if I can say, that is one of the main reasons of the previous case that I referred to. A lot of people, in terms of the 1969 legislation, possess more than four firearms. In terms of the present legislation, normally a person would only be allowed four firearms unless he's a dedicated sports person or dedicated hunter. So one of the issues there was that the constitution, now that was taken on, that a person who actually legally has a license for a firearm has to handle some of those firearms because he would not be able to register all four or all six if it's more than four, unless he becomes a dedicated sports person or a dedicated hunter. And this is also an issue in this case of the Transvaal Agricultural Union. The case is ongoing, so there is no result on it yet, but a court date is being awaited at the moment. Chair, then if I can just talk generally, and this is really figures over a period of 3 years. So once again, I must warn that we shouldn't say this is now the position as it is at present. But if we look at over a period of 3 years, there were 108 applications brought against the SAS. And if I say against the SAS, that's the minister, the Separate Firearms Register, and in many instances the Appeals Board. At this stage, I cannot give you the figures separately for the Appeals Board. We could source that and provide it to the committee. We will have to individually go through the cases and see that. Chair, in respect of those 108 applications, 13 are still pending. And the other 95, orders were actually given against the police. And mainly those were orders where people requested compliance with the Act. License that had been refused or otherwise not issued in time, etc. And once again, I want to say this is really a historic situation. We could maybe have a look at statistics over a shorter period of time, nearer to today's date, and they might show a bit of a different picture. But over a 3 years time, yes, Chair, I think these are indicative of the problems that we did experience in the Central Files Register. The license is taking too long, with the level of decision making, etc., etc. So out of those 108 cases, 95 against the SAS, 13 still pending, and I've highlighted the cases that I think are really important in terms of the pending cases and also the legislation. Chair, when it comes to the legislation, I think I also need to mention the committee has approved in 2006 the Firearms Control Amendment Act or Bill. That Act is not being implemented yet. And for the past 2 years, there have been discussions with the interested parties. The parts of the bill or the Act that was implemented related to the hunters and the collectors. And there were some issues in the Act that people felt agreed with and that needed to be followed up. So, Chair, the ideas with the amendment bill that will come to the committee to align
all those issues in the 2006 Act that withheld us from contributing to Operation Youth, and also to add some new issues that came to the fore to align the Act with the present situation. Thank you.
Chairperson, on a point of clarity. Chairperson, I'm very serious when I say I feel misled today. The general answered my questions by one single sentence saying, but there is control now. If I look at the presentation, on slide 13 it says the following challenges are experienced by the CFR. It means at this moment. Not were, are. Then it states human capital and IT equipment. If you then go to slide number 19, it says improper control of firearms handed in at the police station. The presentation says now we are experiencing it. If we look at slide 21, it was there just now, it says the registration system is not used optimally. In that when there is renewal, the registry staff cannot look at the documents on the system because they were not registered on a plot. No, was not used. The presentation to this committee is that is what we are experiencing now. And the answer from the general is, when I've asked this pertinent question, is, no, we have control now. This is the leading of this committee. In totally unacceptable. Either we get clear answers, now the general has maybe said, which one is wrong? If it has been fixed before the time, why do we get the presentation saying that is what we are experiencing now? I really, Chairperson, I want an explanation on this issue.
So, Honourable Knoebel, just want to indicate at the beginning of the presentation, I've made a comment. I said we have received the presentation, it was quite clear there isn't an indication of action plans in terms of dealing with the challenges. I mean, that's my problem, a lot of the members' problem with the presentation. It states the challenges and problems, but after that, in any standard presentation, you will indicate this is your action plan to deal with all those challenges. And that's the problem the committee sits with today. And we said, if we're not going to get proper responses, they're going to come back on the 3rd of September and give us that pertinent responses dealing with those challenges. So I'm in agreement with that. I think let's continue with the responses, and after the team will come back with other questions. You can go ahead, General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe can I also say, in addition to the direction given by the chair, that we will also forward the action plan. Thank you. Yeah, Honourable Chair, there was a question with regard to officials within criminal charge, because only members of the public have been charged. Can I request represent that we submit this information in writing, because the question requires the number. Thank you very much. Then there was also a question about a trunk of firearms which was lost in close to custody. It led to a criminal case. And I would also like to request that we provide progress on this particular case. We will get to it as soon as the progress. We don't have to set our disposal now. Then there's a question on the data, whether it is still recorded manually or CCY. It's still a hybrid system.
Sorry, spell a what?
Hybrid. Okay. Yes, and the General Sherry has explained the progress and development part on the system side, which we are trying to move away from the manual part, but we're still doing it. It's still CCY. And then...
So in effect, the 400 million spent,
yeah.
I mean, was that... I'm not saying it was fruitless and wasteful, but I mean, if you look at the time span from the initiation of the project until today, the number of years, any auditor will tell you, you know, value for money, I mean, because the question is before the committee, is our firearm registry function optional? All the issues, the resources given to it over the years. And that's why I want to know, if it's still alive, then there's a serious problem. Because that means that the implementation of computer-based system haven't been affected. I mean, that was the idea. So if it's still alive, What is the end game? When are we going to migrate? I mean, is there an immigration plan? I mean, that's my problem with the presentation. You know, in terms of dealing with the issue at hand and looking at the future. General, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm really curious from the proper presentation in this regard, Michelle Polo, so that I think I need to provide a perspective everywhere in the context of what the Chair has been asking about. This contract was awarded in 2004. We work here to continue to begin in October 2004 of that year. It wouldn't have been correct to say that it was completed in 2006 because it literally the event took only 18 months. This contract has been claimed to have been completed in 2011 by the city provider. It is correct to interpret that the value of the contract was about 412 million, to which date about 350 million has been paid, to which 350 million is then accounting to the 80% completion. But when I said earlier this morning that amongst the things I had implemented there is to see what the gap analysis, because to me it provides to you the responsibility to say what are the gaps that have been identified to the system, what are we supposed to address, what is addressed now. This is the response that I say it will be very proper to provide to the check assembly. Amongst the things that we raised to correct some of these are these registration errors. The Honourable Member raised this particular matter, for instance, the registration system, the utilization thereof. It appeared within the utilization of the environment among those members that were found to have had this conduct, is that they interchanged the pathways. One of the things is a pathway could be used by one individual numerous times. If I ever touched it, I share it with you, as a result, it will create a problem like this. One of the correct things that the system has to do is to then ensure that a person logs biometrically so that I cannot exchange my finger with anybody else to log into the system to prevent problems like this. But the question is now raised by the Honourable Member, is the system at that level that it provides that? And the outcome of this gap analysis that I said earlier in my answer, I need to be seeing now. Have we achieved what we had intended with the system so that I provided background? One of the questions the chairperson asked is, has the SIU considered the investigation? No, yes. That report is outstanding. But amongst other things that will allow and actually enable us to take a decision going forward is to what actually has found. Amongst the things that has delayed the processing of these other disputes that we have engaged in as well as the provider to this service. So just rounding this process, I would like to say we need to be providing that response which will be ideal to say what is transpired, what is better. We've gone to an extent of extra getting also independent assessor from the CSIR perspective to see what are the expectations. Can you determine for us that anything is true that you have derived value for money in terms of what has been achieved by us? Because the reason we went out at that contract is in the first place is that we had acknowledged that we did not get a skills development part of the capability. But that process going on, I have also said in response to an honourable member to say, while that process is going on, we may not really delay the process. We would enhance the current system, the ERF, to be able to provide systems like this. That can be done in-house with the things that we have. It is not a problem. So the migration of the old and the new amongst us is based on those outcomes of those conduct, of those resources that are being done. So Chairperson, you can allow this time so that let me provide a response in the proper context and it is not misleading the consequence.
John, thank you for that. Let's take tea for 10 minutes and then we come back. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. we seem not to have numbers supporting that turnaround strategy. And I would want to presume that that is a consequence of the numbers being located elsewhere. And that probably would have to come out so as to assist us to understand fully what your challenges are. I would comment.
Thanks, Chief. Two questions from my side. One is just a question for clarity from a statement that was made in explaining the point that's still up on the projector about the system, and it was around the issue of password sharing that was mentioned. Was that issue specifically around the system being tampered with in terms of password sharing? Because I wasn't quite sure what the password sharing issue was getting at. So we're saying that the system has information or sort of file attachments in it being tampered with, and that's why we have these issues of delays and locating documents. And the second question was, lots of the process and the flowchart of the CFR is quite administrative and quite technocratic in a sense. And unlike most leasing functions, could quite easily be not outsourced, but you can make a short-term intervention to get outside help. Is that a clear part of the turnaround strategy to say we can get consultant assistance to where the process is purely technocratic and isn't going to compromise sort of the policing mandates to bring that in and assist?
Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Wally. I want to know from the department, because now we discuss is a women's land. I want to know how many highest posts that are filled by women in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Martin.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think this is just a follow-up. In the case of police officers who resign whilst being investigated, what happens if there are still internal processes going on? What is the difference? I mean, if a person resigns, does it mean this person, the internal processes stops and the person must be charged legally, or what actually happens? And the second question is, the 108 cases brought against SAPS, they are getting pending a 95 went against SAPS. So it means almost all of them went against SAPS. If 95 already went against SAPS, you can deduce that the 13 will go the same way. What is the reason? Is the reason because there's been an amendment to the law, or there was something wrong with the law that needs to be amended? What is the case? Thank you, Jefferson.
Honorable Frunzelor, any questions from yourself?
No.
Honorable Mulabachi?
Thank you, Frunzelor. I've got two questions. The one is on the racist issues to people with a history of violent behavior. And this applicant who had even confessed to things like murder. How do we make sure that such things never happen again? The second question is on the fraudulent issue of firearms training certificate. An SABC TV journalist bought a training certificate from an accredited firearms training center for 1,000 rand using a fake name and ID number. Where are we in the case? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Since I've been keeping records, over 13,000 SAT firearms have been lost or taken from them, stolen from them. The recovery rate was at around 7%, very dismal, but the recovery rate is extremely low. Now, at the same time, the SAT goes into contract, has to, I suppose, for example, buying 400 new pistols at a cost of 60 million rand to replace, well, the numbers were almost the same, the exact number of the ones that were now out on the streets. So it's a sort of illegal firearms trade going out there supplying people out on the streets with SAT firearms. Now, the problem is that the people who lose their firearms or claim that they, and they list it for me, they left them in a toilet and they left them in a restaurant and all over, they don't seem to face the consequences of the actions. There is, and you have confirmed every one of the claims I've made, and I've referred to as rumors because I'm not a detective, but there is a rumor that certain SATS members regularly sell their firearms to supplement the salaries. And then they say it was taken from me and are given a new one. So I have asked the question before, I've never received a reply of whether or not there are serial offenders who have done this on a regular basis over, say, 5-year periods. But what we have is a huge number of firearms gone in 1 year, let's see, over 6,500, and you had 18 officers found guilty of actually losing it deliberately, shall we say. What happens to them? Are these SATS members ever made to pay to replace the firearms they leave in a toilet or leave in a restaurant or leave in a bus or leave wherever they leave them or claim to leave them? Because it seems to me it's the taxpayer who's paying every time to replace the firearms, because you can spend 16 million replacing them every year. We pay for them, you buy them, and your members lose them again or sell them again, and we start this terrible cycle all over again. The majority of the firearms out on the street used to be on the hip of the SAT officer. That's the problem. So what are you doing to deal with it? And please don't tell me, oh, there's a departmental hearing and somebody's hearing and somebody's auntie will oversee it and they'll give a tap on the wrist, and you know what, we fund him 10 rand. Not good enough. Thank you.
Thank you. See, maybe it's not relevant with specific firearms registry, but I want to ask that the minister, I think it's a week ago, he said that there's an increase in violent crimes because of firearms. That's in fact what he said. We should have more stricter gun control and everything. Now, do we have statistics on how many violent crimes has been committed by legal, my emphasis, by legal firearms owners? Because I have it that more violent crimes are committed by knives and that sort of things than by firearms. Do we have that statistics? Thanks.
Yeah, I just want to maybe go back to the question of the hybrid system. Because if the system is hybrid, one is manual and the other is on the computer base. Now, what is the measures being taken to ensure that the integrity of the data is correct? There can just be expectations of that. And I understand the investigation and we must wait for that, but what would be the top up needed, apart from the 400 million, to ensure that the system is fully run on the computer base? I mean, what is the expectation or the kind of figures we are looking at to ensure that the system as originally envisaged is computer-based and not the hybrid system as it's currently. So if we can just have an explanation of that as well. General Stoller, over to you in the team. Oh, sorry, Honourable Blubasi.
Yes, mine almost links with that one, you see. Your manual statistics and statistics drawn from the system do not mesh. How do you explain that? Thank you.
Thank you
very much, Honorable Chairperson. The first question by the Honorable Member with regard to the budget
I think firstly, the budgetary planning process for CFR, it flows from the visible policy budget, which is program 2 in the in our budget progress. And and when we received the act, we started the operationalization process from the first year. We then work out the budget that is required in order to implement the CFR. But the only difference is that we are implementing the CFR in phases in terms of the budget. And in each of the financial year, we include the other upgraded functions as we have also applied in terms of the action plan. But currently, we would be in a position to present the cost that deliverables of in terms of the action plan, and we can outline the total budget. Important to mention is that we are currently not necessarily affording the total implementation because we are going step by step in terms of implementing it. Then the public question, I'm going to pass it again to General Shelley. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were two questions that related to this, like the use of buses in relation to the entire system. Part of what we are to do as a solution to the system is the check and trace. You want to know who processed what application to the end so that the process is verified. But if you have a buses interchange where there are perhaps the documentation that you want to check and then want to identify who actually worked on this application, it is difficult to solely identify that it is this one because there are gaps in the processes within passwords in the interchange. So that's not what I'm saying. While we are combining those hybrid systems to making it a completely IT-based system, you would want to have just one solution to be able to know how many people or who actually worked on just the one documentation. I think that's part of what General Sittel was talking to earlier about the investigations and so forth, about the members who were charged. I think it's amongst others one of the things that would have been found there. But also just general to take while in the same space to talk to what the chairperson has asked in terms of the hybrid system, what are we investigating with the system? We are investigating a complete solution, chairperson. We don't want any hybrid system. It was from the onset that there was no intention of having two systems running in parallel, because otherwise there's no point having the system to be managed in that process. That's why it is critical that we know at the 80% completion status, what was the 80% talking to exactly, because the complete solution of the entire firearms control system is to have everything included as a scanned process. So it's amongst others the 20% that must be concluded to ensure that all the intended purposes of the systems are adhered to. One login process, clear track and trace of who works on the progress to the end, as well as of all interrelated systems. But it is the intention of this particular system. While I had also said earlier on that those processes will follow suit upon our outcomes of the investigation, we cannot leave the situation as it continues where we see enhancement requirements from the skill base that we have intended.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman. The next question was relating to us employing even the services of the consultants and then to ensure that the firearm administration does not tamper with the normal policing mandate. I think I have already indicated earlier on the National Commissioner has already started engaging with CSIR. And then that's one of the consultants who are coming through to assist us in bettering this particular position. And further to that, in terms of the action plan, we are also looking further in terms of expanding to those areas that we may be unclear for us as we continue to implement. But we would only make use of those services as and when they are necessary. Any venture. There's an addition, Chairperson, with your permission from General Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, General. I forgot to answer the second part on the process model. The honourable member was asking about the technocratic process that is followed in house. Of course it is. We don't intend to outsource any services that is what relates to what the system can offer. I think the whole basis of having that system developed in the first instance was to make processes easy for the people that are logging in. So if the processes are defined nicely from the intention of the system, it shouldn't be a tedious process. At the moment it is tedious, sounds too administrative, but it is something that can be sorted out with internal systems as developed. And of course, the people that are using those systems will be properly trained to know how the system works. Otherwise, if you imply all the services where it is IT-based, then it should be offered.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Moving to the question relating to posts filled by women during the Women Month. Maybe I need to start by saying at senior management level, SAPS is ahead of all the other government departments when it comes to the 50%. And that's a defense report that we also got from the National Commission. So we did not necessarily plan to fill posts during August, but our plan was intended to comply with the government legislation so that we reached there. But I will not be able to give you numbers in total, but I can give you one example. In a panel where I was sitting, we appointed, we recommended to the National Commissioner 4 female brigadiers. It's just now in others, and there's quite a lot of progress and advancement, but we will not be able to give you the total figures. Then, Chairman, there was a question relating to police who resigned, what happens to the investigation. From, if it's criminal, obviously it continues, because when we charge someone with a criminal, then that person is a criminal. There's no second status. Then if we charge this person departmental, it also depends on the nature of the misconduct. If the misconduct is such that this person has got an obligation to either reimburse or repair a damage that has been carried by the state, that process continues even after he has resigned. But if it's a normal misconduct, say for instance he omitted to fulfill his duty as a police person, when he's no longer a police person, the duty of that misconduct would then be determined. But we do not stop at resignation in following a misconduct by any member of the police. And if this person would be owing the state, he would even cross to his pension and claim back what belongs to the state. With your permission, Chairperson, I'm going to ask General Jacob again to relate on the cases, the litigation.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's regarding the 108. Chair, over the period of 3 years, Chair, as I said, in most of those, the majority of those cases dealt with orders that were made about a lack of decisions or decision making. There were actually, in many of these instances, not grounds to actually oppose these applications. And in order for us to oppose the applications, you need to have proper reasons and etc. So in many of those instances, reasons couldn't be given in terms of not delivering on what has been requested. There were 4 matters where the court decided that the reasons that were given did not fall within the Act. But in many of those instances, of the 108, some of these cases had to be even settled because there was no grounds on which we could really oppose them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Then there was a question on licenses issued to people with violent behavior and what exactly are the steps that we are going to take. I want to start by saying part and parcel of cases like this, they involve corruption, which was included in our reaction to that particular corruption based on criminal investigations as well as departmental investigations. Now, one of the steps, those steps that we are taking is to intensify on both criminal as well as departmental measures. But we are also strengthening our risk management and internal control framework in this particular environment so that we then encourage that. Then there's an SAPC case question. Can I request again with your permission, Chairperson, that on this particular case you can provide the written submission here so that we can go through it? And then there was a question that relates to the number of firearms lost vis-a-vis the number that we purchased. I just want to come forward honestly and say, in instances where firearms get lost and we have a requirement to render the service, and in rendering that particular service, then we require firearms, we have an obligation to buy them. That is one area. And the allocation of firearms to members for rendering policing, that also involves their safety. Yesterday, two of our members were shot at Francis Park in court. Yes, and by criminals. So, in terms of making sure that they are safe, we definitely need to make sure that they get firearms where it is required. But that does not set aside the action that we are taking on those firearms which got lost. Where there's criminal cases, we intensify the investigation. Where there's departmental, when each instance where we have a criminal case, we also go departmental. And here I want just to put forward the example of Project 1448, which was driven by both the National Commissioner as well as the National Minister. The intention of Project 1448 was to make sure that this organization does not fit with members who've got criminal records. And that review process when we spoke on it. But further to Project 1448, we also make sure that each and every departmental investigation goes through a complete process of quality control, so that if we realize that the sentence does not work, the misconduct, we then immediately go on review, and then we deal with that particular aspect. I will therefore not go to individual cases, but there are several cases where we dismiss, there are several cases where we go on different sentences, but we just make sure that they work the misconduct which has been committed. The steps taken on the violent crimes committed by legal firearm owners, I would also request through you, Chairperson, that we provide those steps in writing, because we may not be having them now.
But you do have them.
No. We don't have them now.
Not now, but you do have them. But not now.
Okay. Listen, let me say, there are instances where we arrest people who commit crime while they're in possession of legal firearms. There are instances. I can't give how many of those cases, but definitely there are people that we have touched. We've got their own legal firearms. Some of them they didn't get using robbers. So we will go back and look at those particular steps and then provide them upon request. Then, Stephen, I would take it that the question on the data integrity and the measures, including the manual statistics that are not matching with the system, cannot change the answer to the question. Yes.
So maybe in addition to that, just to know, the firearms that fall under the 96 in our legislation, and then those fall under SCA, is those two databases, are they now one? Or are they still separate?
It is a database within a database. They are supposed to be one.
The one that will be in the old year. Isn't it the migration that the shepherd is asking me about? It's the development that was done around the old system so that we integrate the information in the old into the newly developed system. So that's where you won't have the two systems necessarily linking to each other in as one system. The IAM control system, which is supposed to be integrating all of them, but you still have the ERFS system, which separates from what could have been the entire outcome of the intended project. So that's why I ask that please can I not just from the heat so that we get a perspective clear from what is requested, that we get information that is needed so that clarifies the entire perspective.
But it's still two systems?
Yes, two systems.
Okay, that's all.
It is two systems, correct. Coming to the question which Honourable is asked, I'm not sure you're asking from the perspective of just the firearms or just the crime in general. If it is a crime spec, Honourable Chairperson, it is the different system, which is also a part of what is being developed from the existing CAS system into what is called the integrated case management system, or the ICDMS system, from where the statistics will be generated, which statistics will then provide what, you know, at any given point in time, a real statistics of what is expected or what has been reported to the police. One of the systems, one of which we have also to provide the details in that regard, so that mismatch of statistics is corrected. So we have concluded the first phase of the development program in terms of the administrative procedures, and then the last phase on the investigation of the case for going through the entire system is part of what is being developed. It is one of the systems that is going to be used in the justice cluster, not just in the staff, because it will be managing in crime debt from that point of view. So yes, the person there is, but it has already been done to us a great extent, but it is not directly related to the FCS system, which is under discussion today.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. These were the last two questions. I'm not sure whether are there any questions we might have committed by mistake.
Yeah, we will go another answer, of course.
I just have a follow-up. I have nothing more. Just a follow-up on the honour statement that was made.
You can go ahead.
I was interested in your comment about the two detainees who shot in a courthouse. Now, they were transported by SAS members who didn't search them, or they were given the firearms. Okay, let's say they had the firearms in the cells and were then transported by SAS carrying the firearms into a courthouse. Your other alternative is somebody handed them firearms in the courthouse. Your third option is the SAS members handed them the firearms. I don't know who else, too scary. I don't know who else would have given them to them. The point is, civilians might have died, and I'd like to know if, in fact, the two who transported them, and you sounded very sympathetic that they were shot at, are they under investigation? Because somebody has to be held to account for these violent criminals having firearms in a courtroom. They could have killed the judge. So I take it far more seriously, I think, and from a different perspective to that which you are taking.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a follow-up on the question I asked about the 108 cases. The fact that, as the explanation that was given says, that there was no evidence that they did anything wrong. All 108, or 95 of them, there was no information that could be supplied that there was wrongdoing on their part. So it gives me the impression that either there's lack of understanding of the law by those that charged these people, or it was just a thumbs-up decision by some senior or superior officer, or is just sheer victimization of these people. Which is which? I mean, they can all of them lack of information. It definitely doesn't ring a bell in my head, even if I'm a slow catcher, but this one is very difficult to understand. Thank you, Mr. Person.
Thank you for that, Honorable Marty.
Uh,
Thanks, Chairperson. This question also flows from a statement made in the last round of replies, and partly links to my first question around the DFOs. It was mentioned that the firearms control legislation is being implemented in phases, and therefore one of the challenges that was mentioned in the presentation relates to the fact that, and please correct me if I misunderstood, is that the post establishment is not yet fully reconfigured and expanded to match the operational requirements of the Act. That's what I understood. And so my question is, given that the Act has been enacted some years back, what is the time frame and the expected date of completion for the operational system to match those operational requirements of the Act with that phased rollout?
Thank you, Gretel Mugedi. Just a couple of from my side as well. I just want to know, in terms of the database, is it possible, for instance, if we want to know, say, women between the age of 35 and 45 in the Magistrate District of Belleville, everybody wants a gun, is it possible in terms of your system to immediately ascertain that kind of data in terms of your database, if they get to deal with that? Then in terms of training, what is the current training protocols, for example, for the auxiliary DFOs and in terms of staff implement, linked to this unit? And then I also want to know, in terms of the appeal boards, what is the current composition, any challenges of operating effectively and going forward? And then communication plans internally with staff within the unit, is there a specific communication strategy? And then, very importantly, with the public out there, is there a concerted effort to inform the members of the public of the current system challenges and so on? I just want to get a management perspective on that as well. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With your permission, I will ask the Nelson Jacobs to end on the 108 phases.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to be really honest about this. As I said, this is over a period of time. The litigation outcomes are actually communicated on a monthly basis within the SAPS. But I can really only say that is exactly how it was conveyed to me, is that of the finalized matters, orders were granted in all against the registrar and all the firearms appeal board, since the majority dealt with compelling the relevant entities to make decisions on applications. There were no grounds to oppose these compelling applications. Chair, I can just say at one stage I went through reasons that the appeals board also looked at. And I remember one clear case where the reason that was given for the refusal of the license was because the person's premises was not surrounded by a fence. Now, there is no such legal requirement. You need to have a safe, it needs to be a prescribed safe, etc., etc. So, in many of those instances where licenses have to be refused, it's that type of reason that has been avoided. So, when you have to oppose that case, you actually have no case to oppose, because that reason is not the valid reason that was given. So that is basically what I'm saying, that in quite a huge proportion. And that's why I also said I think this is indicative of the problems that was experienced over a period of time. And when the general said, you know, the issue of training, etc. I really think at stages there is a lack of administrative skills and those issues. And I think it was said in the presentation also made of the shortcomings. And we also looked at having like a seminar or a conference where we can look at legal issues. But the issue is broader than that. It is really administration rather than just pure legal knowledge is necessary. But it's also administrative skills that need to be attended to in terms of the training processes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The question which relates to the post-establishment, I would like to first explain it as first. We confirmed the Honorable Member was correct in terms of understanding, but I just want to relate by saying the current new development that talks about it a result of a continuous feasibility analysis of legislation. Whether we implement a policy, whether it is a legislation, we also have a concurrent feasibility analysis process. And part of that feasibility analysis will surface new developments and also linked in terms of the service charge on the client. And as the client brings in also new requirements, and the feasibility analysis can take us to a level when we commission feasibility studies. But then a cut and dry response is in terms of our turnaround, we intend to have the act fully implemented in terms of all aspects and resources by 31st March. This is what I can, how I can respond to it. But that feasibility analysis still continues. With your permission, Chairperson, I will ask Brigadier Majeni to respond to the question on the training protocols.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to allude on the issue of appeals and the claims against the ACPS 95% that is upheld by the appeal board. In these instances, it happens that when we receive an application, and the applicant is having in his or her position the reasons why the application was received. In instances like that, the applicant when submitting an appeal attaches what was outstanding from the application when it was received. So in instances like that, we don't have a basis of saying we cannot approve. According to the information at present, compared to the previous there was no supportive document, but with the submission of the application for appeal, there is. So we don't have a ground to say we received that application. That to add on the issue of the DFOs at stations and even within the environment. The DFOs have been trained with regard to the enhanced firearm registration system that is now interfacing, as the General Shazi has alluded, that the system will be in the long run be integrated, but the EFRS is integrated into the test. That when a case is reported with regard to the lost firearm, those particulars will eventually, if it's captured on the case, will eventually reflect on the enhanced firearm system. And training of DFOs within the regions and with regard to specific stations, where we are having information that there is a shortage of DFOs, and also there are the challenges with regard to what the honorable member raised previously, that what are we doing with these issues. We are looking into that, and then in the interim, when we visit the police station, we have session, instance training that we provide to the DFOs, saying, for example, the application was not completed, it must be completed like that and that. As within the environment, that General Sitala also alluded in his presentation, that there are instances that we see that the DFOs are transferred due to promotions and others are transferred due to ill health. So in those instances, we look into such and say, the person that is appointed in the interim before the post can be advertised, then the person is provided with in-service training so that he can be able to render the service.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. What I can just add to what she says, Chair, is the fact that within the turnaround, we have a special training program that we factored in there. It deals with the skills audit. Then the skills audit, which is a continuous process, then will take us to the training and provisioning then of the organization so that they are prioritized. And when they come back from the particular training, we also link them to a mentorship program to translate the theory into practice. Then, Chairperson, the appeal board, the composition, I want to start by saying it's at the level of the minister, not necessarily at the level of the national committee, but I will still, with your permission, as General Jacob, want to talk to it. Can we get your permission, Chairperson, that we do not talk to the composition?
No, it's fine. I just wanted to go with general purposes.
Yes, and what I can assure you now is that we haven't experienced either challenges with the happy board.
Okay.
The flow between us is correct. And Jefferson, regarding communication strategy, that is one key deliverable in the turnaround strategy. And this particular communication strategy also further links to the next question, which relates to how do we inform the communities, because it also links a community education program. And the National Commissioner has declared the community outreach a top priority, and that's where we're going out to the communities and educate them about some of the critical priorities based on issues that they need to know. And this firearm control issue, it's one that we think that the more we increase the level of awareness to communities, it will actually assist us to manage it more effectively. The last one was a follow-up on the shooting incident. I do not necessarily have much intention to relate deep into the case because it's a criminal issue. The case has been registered and currently under investigation, but what I can relate is that the two members who were shot, the one who was shot in the head is still in hospital. And we are not yet in a position to can interview the member. The other one is in a stable condition, but obviously, given the traumatic effect and other aspects, we're also not yet in a position. We still intend to interview them. Therefore, we cannot at the moment talk to what exactly was the root cause of the particular matter. And a case is under investigation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, other questions at this stage? Right. Final comments from staff before we close this section of the meeting. I just want to alert members who've got still minutes to approve. So we need your operation and your form for that after the staff delegation is left. General overview for any concluding remarks?
Let me first start by thanking you for the leadership that you have provided to us and for welcoming and listening to us. I also want to send an equal word of appreciation to members of the portfolio committee. I think we came here to account on what we are doing. But further to that, we also learning in the process where we require to learn. But then what the great work that the committee is doing for us is always alerting us of our shortcomings. And we're always picking up areas of attention and we know where to go and improve. And we're just going to do that. And when we come back, we'll be better than we are today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General. Yes, Honourable Member, the way forward. Yes, we want to thank the delegation from SAPS for the presentation today. Arms control and gun control is vital for us in a constitutional democracy. There must be stringent rules applicable to applications and the management of that process. But it's also critical that the integrity of the system and the institution that deals with that should be beyond reproach. And from a portfolio committee perspective, we want to see the national development plan to be implemented, especially those dealing with the police. That we need the police that acting professionally and in line with the Constitution. And therefore, it's very important that the issues of firearms control and management are sorted out. We can't have a system where there is any questions about that system. So putting the visible policing framework or fraternity, it's very important that we deal with that matter as a priority. So this is a priority item for the committee. Because, recently I was made
was made aware of a letter that was written last year by the trauma unit head of the University of Cape Town, Professor Van Us, where he said that since early 2011, the Red Cross Children's Hospital has seen a reversal in this trend, noting a marked increase in the number of children presenting with firearm-related injuries. Interaction with trauma surgeons across South Africa agrees that this trend is nationwide. So we've got a collective responsibility as citizens and members of this committee and the society to ensure that we cut down on gun violence. And that's where the role of the SAPs come in vitally. We will support any measure from your accounting officer and your CFO to ensure that you've got the necessary funds to do your job. I think going forward, what we will need from the committee side, and I think visible policing is coming to this committee on the 3rd of September on the public order policing presentation. So what we will need is a document, and we will give them an hour. And I think that is the lacuna of today's presentation, to give us an action plan with timelines and budget allocations as well. Because, I mean, we appreciate, you know, the challenges and so on, but what we need is a committee to satisfy ourselves that we can, with, you know, with authority say, gun control management in South Africa is under control. We need to know what are the steps, timelines. If the task team was activated in 2013, July, what steps until this date, when is the task team going to end, you know, what is your timelines, what's your action steps? Budget-wise, we have to sort out the question of the database IT. That needs urgent attention. Because if there is not clarity about the reliability of the database, you've got a huge problem. And we must assure the citizens out there that SAPS is able to deal with it. I mean, the cause of concern today is your indication that it's SMS vendors, mainly that were arrested, you know, brigadiers and colonels, you know, in those cases. That's shocking. That just shows you that the National Development Plan must be implemented, that there is a dedicated integrity system to ensure that SMS people with those vendors are not in SAPS. We don't need them. We need people with integrity, and this committee will support you all the way to ensure that that happens. So thank you, General, for your presentation and opinion. So in 2 weeks, time, if we can have an hour presentation, you don't have to deal with the issues that you deal with today, but we want just a set out, time-wise, budget-wise, how do we turn around that unit? And we will support the steps with the positive, and it will lead to South Africa where gun control is well managed. Thank you very much. You are excused, delegation, and we will just continue with the minutes. It won't take long unless Mr. Kuala has got a lot of amendments and still a bargain on the honorable market. So it's up to you. It's your choice.
Bring your new rubber. Under presentation by the department, second paragraph, third line, it says Frieza, not Sira. Mm-hmm. So that's just a typo, and of course there's a gap in the second line down. But that's all I've seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, thanks for that, colleague. Let's go through the following
bit. Two things. In that second paragraph under presentation, the it's in the second line should be without an apostrophe.
Let's go informally to the...
Can I ask one question? Mm-hmm. Do you do a map of the presentation by the extra space partner? They're very short. Can we not usually have minutes that are like 3 pages long when we've had a presentation by a particular department? Or am I missing something?
Contain that rather than the secretary?
Chair, there's a report that we draft after the meeting that contains all the information.
Okay.
After every meeting there must be a...
So this is just what you said we...
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
There's nothing in
there. Right. But you must just note your
objection.
No.
You keep me out of the hot room.
Let's go easy to the market.
I think I'm qualified to talk on the minutes even if I wasn't present. I see on the first page the asterisk indicates that the member is an alternate. I don't see any member with an asterisk there. And I've just heard one member saying he is alternate.
So, Mr. Joseph.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So let's go formally justify one. Any errors, rectifications? We've got that asterisk of Mr. Joseph.
nothing else, then we go to coach 2. I think we already have the indication of Kwaru and the space by department. And anything else on 2? And then coach 3. Also space of the CR. Right, can we make a given proposal? Honourable Lavasi, second up on the board, Kwalu Kwalu. Thank you very much for that. Yes, thank you very much, colleagues, for the attendance. According to the secretary, we will leave next Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock from Kortay. The transport to the Yonga police station, and apparently the race car is formed. Maybe just to indicate we need...
4 minutes longer, yeah.
Just to indicate the members, we need to be back that afternoon in the house. I think the house was sitting at 3, so we will spend about 2.5 hours at the Yonga and then 2.5 hours at the unknown station. That's more is our program.
Okay. Just one query. I had my one questionnaire. What form? Should we not have a second one as well?
Okay.
You're welcome. Done.
Thank you very much. We
conclude this meeting.